morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to On the Comic Couch. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Okay. Dazza, what are we here to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about basically the Marvel movies, and specifically the ones that just started to do with the actual, what we call the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it pains me to say that. I know I've said that before in the past, but I'm like, it's such a cheesy phrase. I'm like, I hate myself for saying it, but for lack of a better term, this is what we're discussing today, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it's just different. It just basically separates it from all the other things like the X-Men franchise and all the other franchises like that. Yeah. But you're right, it is a corny name.
It's a corny name. It's a cheesy name. It's especially when people use the abbreviation MCU. I kind of cringe a little. I'm like,
I always think it's some sort of like computer. When we say the MCU, it just sort of, you know.
So it sounds like a wacky character straight out of the MCU. Yeah. All right, let's find a good place to start as any. Let's talk with our first movie. Let's see if I can find the date for this. May 2nd, 2008. The first we're going to be talking of course, is Iron Man. Let's play a little bit of the trailer real quick.
No one's allowed to talk, is that it? You can't talk?
No, you intimidate them.
Good God, you're a woman.
Is it better to be feared or respected? And I say, is it too much to ask for both? I humbly present the Jericho. To peace.
Yes, this was started the whole shebang off. I guess Marvel at this point, you know, sold the rights off to Fantastic Four, to X-Men, to Spider-Man. So they pretty much had to, you know, I like to consider the Marvel Cinematic Universe the land of misfit toys.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they basically what they had left with were all the characters that basically weren't in the public consciousness. I mean, it's interesting about Iron Man that they tried to raise the awareness quite a lot and also to, you know, promoting this film early on. Because apparently there was a feeling that people thought that Iron Man was actually a robot. You know, people didn't read the comic or
to be fair, that's how it sort of was presented in the comic book, and it says that it was his bodyguard. It was, I'm sure people thought maybe at one point it was a robot.
Yeah, but I mean, if you just sort of ever saw just like, you know, the comic or, you know, and never actually sort of bothered to read it, you know, you would just think of him just as a robot. And I think that, you know, like I said, they had basically just all left over, you know, the characters that basically, you know, no one really sort of, you know, knew about. And to be honest, they had tried to actually sell off, you know, these characters quite a lot in the past as like, you know, a package deal. Mm-hmm. And some had actually sort of, you know, taken them on, but these sort of, you know, the developments, you know, it just never really happened. We just never felt that there were strong enough characters to do. And at the time, Marvel in 2008, superhero movies were sort of like, you know, coming back into vogue. The Spider-Man franchise had been really, really successful. And we also, a few years before, you had Batman Begins, which I think was really, that one was like a really important one, because it was for the first time, it kind of did a more sort of adult, sophisticated feel to actually doing a superhero, you know, movie, as opposed to this sort of like, you know, the sort of, you know, the crime fighting vigilante that you'd had before. This was sort of, you know, if you can see a few similarities with this one and with the Batman Begins, because it was very much like sort of, you know, a character piece. You actually sort of, you know, following this, you know, character through, you know, on his development into being a superhero.
Yeah, it was more of a stripped down, sort of a realistic approach to doing a superhero movie, which at the time was kind of, you know, a little out of the ordinary.
Yeah, definitely. I think it works, you know, really well, because I'm a really big fan of this film. I think, you know, it's a really good one, and I think Robert Downey Jr. is just, you know, just absolutely great in it. But it is a really good, you know, character piece, because you start him off with his sort of, like, you know, his sort of rich, you know, doesn't care, arrogant, you know, billionaire, and he's obviously sort of captured and everything. And the sort of, you know, the rise to him being Iron Man is quite a sort of, you know, development, because originally he's just used to, you know, escape when he's being sort of kidnapped. And then he basically just seems sort of going through this sort of, you know, his experiences there affect him, mm-hmm. and he starts, you know, building the suit and everything. And this one scene, which I always think is absolutely, you know, wonderful, where he's actually just sat watching the TV And at this time, it's already sort of like, you know, build the environment and so, but you get a feeling that he doesn't really know what he's going to do with it. And he's watching television and he's just seeing all this stuff that's going on in you know, in country, and sort of feeling like sort of like a bit of guilt to, mm-hmm. to, you know, to the fact that he's been basically sort of, you know, making weapons and making these situations worse. And just like the look on his face is just watching the TV and just sort of like, you know, when he sort of actually becomes it, he's going to do something about it. I just think the whole film, it's just sort of like, you know, a really good starting base. And I think it's sort of, you know, quite, you know, a really surprising one as well.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that took a lot of people by surprise. Not only were they able to make an Iron Man film and get people to care, it's actually really good. I mean, we're going to be talking a lot of films today. And God bless the other films, but this is, in my opinion, one of the best.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's about more than just, you know, sort of being an action film and, you know, being a superhero. I mean, you can sort of like, you know, see sort of like, you know, bits of sort of like, say, you know, politics in there as well. The fact that you've got like an industrialist and, you know, what he was actually, you know, himself doing with, you know, to the world and everything like that. And, you know, I just think it's a, you know, a really great piece. I think the ending is kind of, because obviously we have to have sort of, you know, a bad guy and a superhero fight at the end. I think that feels a little sort of odd and out of place. But you know, you did need to sort of, you know, so it's by no means a, you know, a perfect film, but you know, I think it's a, you know, a really good one. So really successful, you know, caught a lot of people by surprise. And you know, of course you have that, you know, that when I went to see it, because at the time I wasn't someone who was sort of, I was somebody who was like, go to the cinema every couple of weeks, but I wasn't somebody who like read the magazines or sort of like, you know, looked up on the internet for upcoming things. So, but I'd heard of these rumors that there was something at the end of the credits. There was something, you know, so I actually sort of like, you know, sat and waited for this. And like, you know, a lot of people were sort of, so thought, you know, something's going to happen. This. Of course, the credits go down and then the scene comes back up again. And you just think, oh, God, what's going to come out? I mean, Nick Fury does the thing where he goes, I'm here to talk about the Avengers Initiative.
Nice.
And it was like this sort of really like, oh, my God, they're going to do this. They're going to sort of do an Avengers film eventually, you know, because I'd heard of these little, sort of little rumors. But I've been hearing them for like sort of years that, you know, that sort of, you know, one day they'd do some to like a big superhero movie. But at that point, you never really thought it would come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But that thing, and at the time, it was probably a bit premature of me to think this, because at the time it was, you know, although that was the, you know, the initial dream that they had, it was by no means certain that that is what they were going to do. You know, it basically was all the, you know, the success of Iron Man that sort of, you know, that got the whole ball rolling. But, you know, at the time it was just like a little thing on there. But, you know, because Samuel Jackson was in that scene, but he'd not signed on to actually do any more films beyond that little cameo.
Smart man.
You know, so, you know, so it was, you know, although they sort of planted the seed in there, it was by no means, you know, a definite thing that, you know, we were going to get the cinematic universe that we've actually got today.
Yeah, we were hoping for something, but who's to say if it would actually come to fruition?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see a lot of films. I mean, if you ever watched like horror films from the 70s and 80s, you'd always get that scene at the end where, you know, there'd be sort of, if you watched like a killer wasp movie, there'd be like that little one wasp that was sort of still alive and stuff like that, which was always set by, you know, for a sequel. But you would never guarantee that you would get these sequels or anything.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, you know, they hope maybe down the road, if this movie does well enough, that they already shot something so they can go straight into a sequel.
Yeah. Definitely. And it was a, you know, a big success. I mean, I've got the figures in. It was, you know, 582 million box office worldwide. You know, it was, you know, a really big hit, especially for a character that was basically pretty much, you know, unknown going into this film.
Yeah, I have to imagine, though, a lot of credit that is to, you know, putting Robert Downey Jr. as the role of Tony Stark. And then more importantly, I think, yeah, that was part of the appeal. But really, the big draw of this movie also was, this is Robert Downey Jr. sort of, he'd done movies prior to this, but this has been the first big movie since he, you know, recovered from his drug addiction. So this was, this, I mean, he like I said before, he had other movies before this, but this was sort of his comeback party.
Yeah, and that's something about, you'll get about sort of stuff about like Hollywood, is that they actually do, they love that sort of, you know, that comeback, you know, story to it. You know, it happened a few years later with Oh, what's his name? Guy in the wrestler.
Yeah, I know. You're getting a little ahead of yourself there, Dazza, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But I'm just saying, you know, that you know, he, you know, when he sort of came back, you know, in the wrestler and everything, it is something that sort of, you know, Hollywood, you know, really gets behind. But yeah, it just sort of, you know, it was, you know, a great film. I think as well, you could tell from the sort of like the credits and everything that this was going to be like, you know, a fun movie. I mean, in that trailer that you've just played there, you know, the actual, you know, Downey's charisma just comes through it so well. I mean, I remember that trailer, you know, when he does the line about him, you know, why can't you be, you know, feared and respected? And he does the thing with the bomb in the background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, you know, it just sort of, you know, it just came across so well, you know, in that. And he was sort of, I think, you know, a vital part of the whole franchise going forward as well.
Yes. Okay, from there, I think we can go into our next film. Let's see if I can pull the date up right here. From May 2nd, 2008, to go straight, almost immediately after that, the next month after, we had June 13th, 2008, we had The Incredible Hulk. And let's see if we can play a little bit of that trailer real quick.
But because until I solve this problem, I have to be.
Your target is a fugitive from the U.S. government who stole military secrets.
This is the location. Snatch and grab only. Live capture.
Taken.
Okay, now, Dazza, what did you think of this entry on the Incredible Hulk franchise?
I kind of like elements of it. To be honest, most of the elements, the bits I like were the bits when the Incredible Hulk actually wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I liked the whole sort of, you know, the him looking for a cure and sort of being on the run and everything like that. I think one of the problems with the film is the CGI, I don't think, was quite ready at this time, or all the effects that they had to actually, you know, do. When you looked at the Incredible Hulk, it looked pretty much like you were looking at a cartoon character.
It looked too over the top. Aspects of it didn't quite look quite finished yet. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, they're in the right direction, but they're not quite there yet.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's some good. I mean, I did think Edward Norton was good in it. I thought Tim Roth was good in it as the villain. You know, and I did really get into the story, but you know, like. Again, we had sort of, you know, the big battle at the end and everything. And again, it just looked like they seemed to be going for the sort of, you know, the spectacular without actually giving the sort of the fights any sort of meaning or sort of style, anything like that. It was okay. I don't think it was absolutely sort of terrible, but, you know, I wasn't sort of like, you know, made anything special about it either. I think to me, the most exciting bit of the film was right at the end. When we didn't actually get a credits after credit scene, but we got the bit before the end where Tony Stark walks into the bar and does the line about we're putting a team together.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was sort of the most exciting part because it was like linking this to Iron Man, and you know, and you felt that sort of like, you know, things were really, you know, underway at this point.
So yeah, it was kind of cool that everything seemed to be coming together. The scene you're, of course, referring to is Tony Stark sitting down at the bar with General Ross, and you know, alluding to the fact that, you know, not only are these two franchises that the studio has, but they're looking to link the franchises together. They occupy the same space, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Okay. And that was, and again, when I went to the cinema, I'd heard this rumor that Robert Downey Jr. was actually going to be in it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it was just like a rumor, but it was sort of, you know, it was great seeing him sort of pull up. Another thing that actually was supposed to be originally a third link in this film to the Marvel universe, because there's a scene that was supposed to be at the start where Edward Norton tries to basically commit suicide in the... you know, in a snowy, I'm not exactly sure what it's meant to be, but it's like a snowy, like ice wasteland. He tries to commit suicide. He turns into the Hulk and starts smashing ice. And if you look close, this is a deleted scene.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look closely, you'll see a load of fragments going. And there's a briefest look, you can see what looks like Captain America actually frozen in the ice, which basically never actually sort of like played a part. Anyway, you know, the scene was taken out of the film, and he never really played a part anyway, because it was a totally, when we actually found out where Captain America was, it was a completely different thing. But again, you could see that they were putting these like little sort of like Easter eggs in there. And of course, there's like, you know, lots of references to S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. But as a film, I thought it was fine. Like I said, I think that the best bits were the bits without the Hulk actually in them, you know, but it was okay. But it's one that I think is quite forgettable. I think as well that people sort of choose to forget one because of the fact that they changed the actor in it. You know,
yeah, that's one of those things where, yeah, it was technically a film, you know, and then they still done the I don't know who owned the rights to Hulk, but they, you know, it was still a co-joined film, but it was mainly, you know, going forward, it was in fact a Marvel film, but it's one of those films that, yeah, you're right. People like to pretend like it didn't happen because, you know, at the very end when they were making the Avenger film, I guess for whatever reason why, and we'll go into this later, that they decided to switch the actor.
Apparently, I mean, there's a lot of stories why that occurred, but one of the things is that Edward Norton, he sort of claims that he basically didn't want to get into a franchise, and other people claim that he was basically a pain in the arse to actually work with. So, take whoever you think. But I thought it was, you know, really good in this film. He's a great actor and everything and that, you know, but, you know, I kind of thought I would miss him later on, but, you know, I in the end I didn't.
Well, I thought he was a better comparison in the sense that you would have this Incredible Hulk and then you would have meek Edward Norton. And say what you will about, you know, Mark Ruffalo, I just think there was a better comparison. At least as far as comparing the two physiques to make the transformation much more incredible, pun intended.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Okay. And it wasn't, like I said, we're talking 2008, and it wasn't for another 2 years before we get another one of these movies. And the next one we get is obviously Iron Man 2, which we're going to play a little bit of that trailer real quick.
Priority here is to have you turn over the Iron Man weapon to the American people.
Well, you can forget it. We're safe. America is secure. You want my property? You can't have it. But I did you a big favor.
I have successfully privatized world peace.
We're adjourned for the day. You've been a delight.
Okay, give me a smooch for good luck. I might not make it back.
Go get him, boss.
You complete me.
Yes, that's, of course, Iron Man 2. Now, Dazza, what did you think of this film? I like most people, you know, going off the success of Iron Man 1, we thought, oh, well, we're going to get great more of this. It's going to be a great film like the first. And, you know, at first when I watched it, I thought, okay, this is what I expected. It's sort of, you know, the first film was even, it was a great little character piece, but also, you know, had a lot of action. And this sort of just up the ante. This was, you know, kind of a, I hate to say it, but a dumb action film. Like, it wasn't the finest entry in this Marvel Cinematic franchise.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when I first saw it, I thought it dragged quite a lot. I think I would have been, I mean, it was but more of a dumb action movie, but it also tried to sort of like, it tried to go back and like give an element to, in the first one we'd had like sort of, you know, the personal development of him and everything, him becoming Iron Man. And then this one seemed to try to do the same, but just not as successful. It just sort of, you know, for me, it dragged in, you know, quite a lot. I mean, the whole thing where he's trying to basically sort of like, build the equipment so he can, you know, come up with this new element that's going to help him with his the thing in his heart and stuff like that. I just thought it really dragged. It was one of these things that when the first one you had sort of like him a place where he had to go, you know, in himself personally, and was sort of, you know, a direction for that. In that one, in this one, I didn't really get the sense of that. It just seemed to be sort of like, you know, they took him down, but he was sort of starting to be a drunker and arsehole and everything like that. And then all of a sudden he just seemed to be fine. And it just, the whole sort of like, you know, that story arc didn't really sort of intrigue me at all like it did in the first one.
No, it wasn't the strongest story, but, you know, they were trying to, I feel like they were trying to tell too many stories at once. because just, you know, you look at on its face value and each of the individual stories are particularly not that strong. You have the story where he's trying to fix his condition with whatever the, these, his, what's the name of the core he has? I forgot the specific name of it.
I forget as well. But I mean, that was a dumb, you know, when he actually comes up with a solution, he finds out that his dad's actually left him the idea for this sort of like element by using it as a map at the World Trade Fair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me was when that was like the twist. I just thought, oh, you know,
it was a little cheesy. But it, yeah. what we did get out of this. Go ahead.
Why would someone do that?
Here's the thing. If it was so important for his son to find that, like why not just make it a little more obvious? Why not just write it down?
Yes, put it in a safe. put it in his will, or put him in a safe, or something like that. It's just one of those things that sort of, you know, drives you crazy when you're watching a film like that. And I couldn't really get sort of like, you know, the connection between sort of, you know, that element and his dad and stuff like that. It just seemed to be it was one of these things that a script writer would basically sort of write something like that, and if you quiz him on it, he'd just say, you know, why are they doing that? And he'd just say because.
Because reasons.
Yeah. But like you said, there was other storylines going on, but sort of you have the storyline with Whiplash that sort of started really well and then just seemed to like disappear for ages.
Yeah.
And then come back at the end. It was just, you know, with the sort of, you know, the battle with the robots and anything. It just felt quite sort of, you know, just a bit all over the place. I have to say as well, and this would actually change later, but I didn't like Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow in this.
She was fine. She's a big name. It's a character that they established. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I felt better after, but in this, I just didn't like her as a character. I think it's probably because for so much of the film, she's actually not playing the Black Widow role. So when she actually becomes, you know, she's playing this like meek secretary. So when she actually becomes the Black Widow, it kind of looks a little bit corny. I mean, the bit where she's sort of like, you know, hitting all the guards and everything, and I mean, she's like walking away. I just felt she didn't basically come across to me as like, you know, a badass at that time. I just didn't think she was right for the role. But again, that would actually change, you know, later. But as a film, I thought it was, I don't hate it as much as other people do, but it's not a film that I can actually sort of go and sort of, you know, watch. Necessarily, you know, I think there's a large chunk of it that just sort of, you know, dwell and just sort of, you know, are very slow, and everything. It just sort of, you know, just, yeah, it's okay, but it's not one that I think added a great deal to the actual,
anything, I thought it sort of maybe hurt the franchise a little bit going forward, whereas you had all this great will for, you know, Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man. To come out of that first film and then make this sequel, which it wasn't terrible, but people were really disappointed. It's like people.
And I think you can tell as well. I don't really know this for certain, but it has that feel to it that it was like this one was like shoehorned in with all the others. Because all the other films were like basically introducing a new character and everything. It was almost as if Iron Man's done really, really well. We need to do an Iron Man 2 now and put it before the others. It doesn't sort of like, you know, it doesn't move things. With all the others, you get a sense that, oh, here's another character that's moved along and being introduced to the thing. With this one, I mean, I know you've got sort of Black Widow in there, but this one just feels like it's just sort of, you know, we need another Iron Man film right away because the first one did really, really well.
Yeah, as far as the grand picture, it didn't do very much. It established maybe Black Widow and eventually down the road War Machine, but really, aside from that, we really got nothing, a big takeaway. And for the most part, this kind of soured people, at least for a little bit, on the Iron Man character.
No. It did introduce Agent Coulson more as an ongoing character as well.
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to say, and we got the after-credits scene in this one, where Coulson's actually out in the desert. But by this time, it just became a thing that, you know, that you stayed right to the end of the, you know, of the credits. Even though even today, I'm always surprised at this, but there's people walking out whenever you go to a Marvel movie, and it's like, you know, you sort of think, where are you going? It's going to be like, you know, a cool after credit scene, but, you know. But yeah, but we got the thing where Coulson's in the desert and he finds Thor's hammer, you know, so which people at the time, I remember a lot of people sort of misquoted, because people seemed to think he was saying when he goes out, we get somebody, his telephone out, he's saying, I found him. You know, which he's actually not. He's saying, I found it. You know, so that was quite, you know, so that was, you know, but so people thought that basically Thor was already like, you know, was already on the planet at this time, but that was obviously not the case.
No. And like you said, that plays perfectly into our next film. A year later, we had May 6, 2011, we had the next entry, Thor.
It's not easy to do what you did. You made my men look like a bunch of minimum wage mall cops. That's hurtful. Would you like to tell me where you received your training? Afghanistan? Chechnya? Who are you?
I was hoping he was going to say Thor there. I've not seen this trailer a million times. But yeah, that's our next entry, Thor.
I've got to say, I really like this film. I think it's...
Ooh, you're the one then. Wow.
I'm the one. I really liked it. I liked the fact that it was... I think they did a really good job of Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this was something that I thought was going to be quite... difficult for them actually to do, was to basically, you know, come up with a way to introduce Thor into the actual, you know, cinematic universe. And I think they did it really well by making, like, sort of, you know, an excuse on why Asgard was actually sort of, like, you know, there and well known. And some of the things don't really match up where, you know, the fact that Thor's, you know, an actual sort of known in the sort of like the mythology of Earth, but you know, you'll see him as a kid growing up there in Asgard and everything. And I personally really liked it. I thought some of the things didn't quite work. I thought that when the Warriors 3 arrived on Earth, I thought that kind of looked out of place. They looked like a bunch of a cosplay guys going to a convention and stuff. I liked it. I thought it was a good story there with Thor basically like losing his powers, you know, and being sort of like, you know, having to prove himself worthy and everything like that. I think it was like, you know, a good story there. I enjoyed Loki. I thought Loki was a great villain. It's probably, you know, still, you know, the best one that they've actually done. I had no problems with it. I enjoyed, you know, most of the film. I thought it was, you know, some good humor in there and everything. You know, I realize that this is one that sort of, you know, divides opinion, but I personally really liked him, and I'm guessing you didn't.
I don't think it really divides opinions, Daz. I think most people are of the opinion that Thor wasn't very good.
we've talked enough about films in the past that you know that I have very different opinions to most people.
We can keep things civil here, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. I still respect your opinion, but yeah. I'm still the, you know, I've heard people talk, and I guess the general consensus is that Thor was the weaker of the entries. Let's leave it at that.
I personally enjoyed it. You know, it sort of, you know, flowed well for me as a film. There was a story there. You know, the action scenes that, you know, I real liked, and you know, I personally stand by. I personally liked it as a film. I enjoyed it, but I realize that a lot of people don't.
All right, let's move on to our next film. Two months later, we had Captain America, the First Avenger, opening up July 22nd, 2011. And here's a little bit of that trailer.
Rogers, Steven.
Just give me a chance.
Sorry, son.
I'm saving your life.
General Patton has said that wars are fought with weapons, but they are won by men.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I could do this all day.
Our goal is to create the greatest army in history.
I should be going with you.
Look, I know you don't think I can do this.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
But every army begins with one man.
Fine, try.
What's so funny, Dazza?
I just think that's great radio there. A trailer for the radio.
Well, we're just playing, you know, a little bit so people kind of get a feel what we're talking about. If you want, I can just forego that.
No, I think it's funny. But either, I mean, I've got to say, with this film, I personally wasn't that thrilled with it. And to be honest, I was disappointed. I think it starts well. He's sort of like his origin into, you know, becoming Captain America and doing through the whole propaganda thing. But when he actually becomes Captain America, I think the film kind of loses itself somewhat for me. It's become sort of, it gets really rushed. It just sort of like, you know, becomes lots and lots of montages. You know, the action scenes and everything. And I just don't, I was really disappointed. One thing that disappointed me as well is that I was really looking forward to like a war epic, and it's sort of, which it was, but it became less about him basically fighting in the Second World War against sort of the Nazis in Germany, and became basically, they put in Hydra instead, which, you know, may well have been for like sort of, you know, political reasons when we wanted to distribute the film overseas to like Germany and things.
Well, then
like
to me, it also sets things up better for the future as well, because had they just gone for the Nazis, it's like it would have been harder for them to do something with Hydra down the road.
Yeah. I think one of the things is I didn't like the look of Hydra. I thought those costumes, like the sort of like the leather costumes, just didn't, I don't know, they didn't work for me. We just looked a little bit, you know, cheesy. I just was not that, I was just not that taken with this film. I think it was basically the, you know, the point when he becomes Captain America, you know, the sort of, you know, the storyline on from that just didn't sort of like, grab me at all. But I personally felt that Chris Evans was fine. I love the scenes where he was actually like as Steve Rogers as the skinny guy. I thought those scenes I would sort of done that, you know, was like, you know, it's one of those like, you know, subtle uses effect that I think gets sort of, you know, quite forgotten. But yeah, of this and four, you know, I think four did a, you know, a much better job of introducing, you know, the character and make it into a good action film than Captain America. I was disappointed with this.
Yeah, I think honestly, after Iron Man, this is kind of like the valley for me for the films. Like we just went over Incredible Hulk, Thor, and now we're talking Captain America. And while the films weren't particularly awful, I just thought, I guess they're fine. But like when you compare it to the first Iron Man film, it's like there's a bit of a quality drop off in my opinion. So it was one of those things to where, you know, when they were going through the next film, I kind of went, you know, with low expectations. So I was like, well, they haven't really wowed me since Iron Man, so I don't even know what to expect, you know, going forward. So, I mean, I'm still on board because these are still, for the most part, you know, fairly decent movies, so I'll keep watching them, but it's not doing a whole lot for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I just sort of, and I think the exciting thing about this was that once you got this, it was like, well, the next one's the Avengers, you know, but I don't think it was sort of one that sort of, it didn't give much hope for the actual future of the franchise from this point onwards. I just kind of found it sort of like, I just wasn't, you know, thrilled with it at all as a movie.
Okay. I'm glad we agree on that aspect of it. So that sets the table perfectly up for the next entry in this Marvel franchise. We have in May 4th, 2012, we had The Avengers.
War has started. And we are hopelessly outgunned.
Director Fury, I think it's time.
You here with a mission, sir? Trying to get me back in the world?
Trying to save it.
Doctor, we need you to come in.
What if I say no?
I'll persuade you.
What are you asking me to do? It's called the Avengers Initiative.
I thought I didn't qualify.
Apparently I'm, what is it? Volatile, self-obsessed,
and don't play well with others.
Yes, that is the Avengers. Daz, are your thoughts?
I love this. I was so, I don't think, with the exception of Star Wars Force Awakens, I don't think there was ever a film that I was that hyped to see. You know, I was sort of like, you know, just it was one of those films, I think, that I sort of, it was kind of like, as I was getting ready to go see it, I was like, I can't believe that this is finally happening after sort of, you know, growing up with comic books as a kid and all sort of like, you know, and seeing what comic book movies were to actually come to this stage where you actually sort of had like, you know, a big, massive budget film. And there's never been a franchise that has actually done what Marvel did with this, mm-hmm. in by having sort of, you know, a series of films to introduce certain characters and then have like one super film where they all sort of like, you know, come together. It had just been never done. And to be honest, it felt like sort of like, you know, basically if you'd gone back 10 years, it would have felt like, you know, like a fanboy dream. I was also like really nervous about going to see it. I think I sort of posted at the time something on Facebook like saying, if this movie sucks, you're never going to hear from me again. It was just something that just sort of like, you know, I was so hyped about. And I absolutely loved it. I think it basically, I'm not saying it was like, you know, the perfect film, but I think it did everything that it needed to do, you know, as a movie. It just basically sort of like, you know, brought the characters together. You had a storyline there that sort of like, you know, where you could get lots of action from. And there's a bit, that moment where they're fighting in New York and they do the scene, like the montage scene where they're sort of splitting from one to the other as we're taking out the aliens, just that sort of that long, you know, tracking. So as I was watching that, I just got these sort of like these goosebumps at the time. And I was just,
nerd. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm a nerd, I admit it. And I just sort of got these goosebumps as if like, oh God, this is good. It works as, you know, it works as a film of, you know, because it could have been a complete train wreck of a film with many things, but I think they just managed to do a good job of sort of like, you know, balancing everything and giving it like, you know, a decent story and also making it really funny and entertaining. You know, I think that's one thing that you sort of, you know, that you forget with something like The Avengers is the amount of like, you know, funny moments and good jokes that they did and sort of like, you know, it just sort of, I think, you know, for me, it worked as a film. I thought it was great.
I remember my first impressions of the Avengers. They showed it at the end trailer of Captain America, you know, the first Avenger. Hmm. When I first saw that, they just showed the first three that they had the rights to. They showed Cap, they showed Thor, and they showed Iron Man. I saw that, and I thought, I'll watch it, but really just those three guys? And I was like, whatever, I'll watch the film. I know they sort of established maybe the other characters like Hawkeye and Black Widow, but I was like, I didn't really see a lot of them in that initial trailer, so I thought, so you're going to do the Avengers with just them three. I'll still watch, but I'm not fully on board. Then that Super Bowl trailer came out, and they showed the Hulk, and I was like, that's a game changer. That's a game changer more than anything else, because I'm like, okay, you're kind of dealing with an all-star cast here, and then I finally saw all six members. I'm like, they're onto something here.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I watched the film, and I think it's the first 90 minutes. I'm like, it's kind of a boring film. Like, it's decent and all. It's on par with what they've been doing up until this point, but kind of a boring film. And then that last 30-minute fight scene, I was like, okay. this is something that's actually living up to the hype now. This is something where, you know, I wasn't like you where I was on board, keeping up to tabs with everything new. I sort of came late to the party. I was like, well, let's see what this big Avengers buzz is all about. And of course, I watched and I'm just like, oh, okay, now I get it. Now I get why all the love. I get why all the, why this is breaking all kinds of records as far as business is concerned. I'm like, oh. it's one of those things where I had to see it to believe it. So once I finally saw it, I was like, okay, I'm on board with this thing.
Yeah. You mentioned that sort of, you know, that battle scene in the thing. I think it's so great because they actually sort of, they didn't just have like sort of like one big long battle. They had little scenes within, you know, scenes like little stories. So there's 1 minute they're fighting the big alien, and one bit, you know, Black Widow's on, you know, she's on the bicycle and everything like that. They just did some, you know, so, you know, made a sort of like, you know, a long battle scene really, really interesting, not one that you really get bored. So you're not just watching like, you know, things falling down, exploding everywhere and you get sort of like, you know, peaks and troughs in the battle. So there's bits where the sort of, you know, the Avengers are sort of winning. And then there's that's a great moment with the Hulk where he, where he's basically just sort of dispatching guys left, right, center. And he turns around and there's like a whole like fleet of the spaceships basically above him, and they start blasting him. And then you see all the different Avengers all basically starting to get fatigued and get like beaten down and stuff. And then you get the whole thing with a missile, but they just managed to keep, you know, a big long battle scene like really, really interesting. There were one or two things that sort of, you know, I didn't think worth it. For a start, I think, Captain America's outfit looked really, really bad. It just looked really, really cheesy, you know. And I think this, you know, they sort of worked on that later on. But I think when I saw that in the trailers and everything in the scenes, I kind of sort of like grimaced, because it was like anyone seeing this is going to think this looks like really, really corny. Because up to that point, they'd done a really good job of basically making all the superheroes look sort of, I won't say realistic, but sort of like not, you know, quite dignified in a sort of, for want of a better word. But when you saw that outfit with the mask and everything, I just thought that was like, you know, a really, it didn't flatter him at all. And I think he looked a lot better when he actually had the mask sort of down and just, you know, going with his, like, you know, with it, you know, with the mask off and everything. But generally speaking, I sort of, you know, I personally, I really, really loved this film. It was a massive hit. I mean, you know, 1.5 billion.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, that was pretty good figures. You know, and it did sort of catch by people's, like, you know, I was it was amazing that the fact that it became into the consciousness so well. I mean, I even remember them. Dana White talking about a UFC. There was a UFC show the weekend, but it basically.
Oh, I remember this one. This one. It was Nick. It was Nate Diaz versus Jim Miller, and right, it underperformed on Fox. And he was saying, "Well, it's not our fault that this show underperformed. Never mind. It was Nate Diaz versus Jim Miller, and the show that they had done prior to this was the big, you know, all out affair where they threw out the triple main event, and to go from that to just." Okay, your main event is Nate Diaz versus Jim Miller. I'm like, okay, there's gonna be a bit of a drop off. And then when Dana was approached to, you know, the lack of success that this show did, he pretty much blamed. He's like, well, the Avengers just came out, so I can't really be blamed for how this show does.
Yeah, so you know, to me that was sort of like, you know, funny that it became like, you know, such a big deal that it would have this almost like Super Bowl element to it, that, you know, that it would sort of like affect the regular going of people's lives having an you know, Avengers, and you know, it was kind of probably a little bit of a scare wheel, but the fact that it could,
yeah, I was about to say, just like a carried away here,
it could be plausibly used as an excuse, you know, it just sort of,
well, Dazza, nobody wanted to see it because it was bright and sunny outside, nobody wanted to be inside watching TV.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Yeah, in case of you, for those of you who don't know, you often hear, for our experience, we, you know, we've heard wrestling promoters talk about why certain things didn't draw, and like I said, they're bad excuses. It's like, no, nobody wanted to see that fight because it was Nate Diaz versus Jim Miller in the main event. It's a great fight on itself, but to try to pass that off as a main event on Fox, it's like, don't be surprised if this doesn't particularly do well in the ratings.
Yeah. That's actually something that you get working in retail. You get excuses for why a shop's underperforming on certain days. If it's sort of like really hot weather, you say, well, nobody wants to go out in like really hot weather because it's, you know, it's too nice. People want to sit in the garden, don't want to go shopping. And then if it's sort of raining, people say, well, people aren't going to come out, you know, because it's raining. They're not going to want to go out raining when it's sort of, you know, everything's going to stay in and that. So, you know, the weather gets used both ways.
but like we were saying previously, it's one of those things to where it doesn't matter what's the problem. People had no problem seeing the Avengers film. So yeah. Say what you will. It was a fantastic movie that really kind of revitalized the franchise. Because up until now, like I said, the films weren't bad. But they were like, okay, that we kind of get an idea of what these films are. They're a little bit better than what we see in the past. But really, they're not lighting the world on fire. And Avengers really did sort of take things... You know, we've seen great superhero movies established, but this really just took it to a completely different level.
Yeah, and it got to a stage where, you know, from this point onwards, you know, a Marvel movie was an event, you know, and it was something that basically, you know, people actually would refer to films as a Marvel movie. Oh, there's a Marvel movie coming out, you know, so people actually had the, you know, the branding in their heads when they went out to see these films. And, yeah, it was just sort of, you know, but one thing as well, it just sort of how these characters just sort of, you know, look together. You know, it just kind of, you know, it was just something that brought them together, just kind of work. And going off from what I said earlier, I think Scarlett Johansson was her character was so much better in this film. I mean, from that scene where she's sort of like in the, where she's tied to the chair, and it turns out that she's actually doing like a reverse interrogation thing and that, and then she frees herself, and she just comes across as a, you know, such a great character. The only thing that I have has always bugged me, and it bugged me in the scene as well, you know, when we'd show it on TV, was the bit where it shows you them like in a circle and they're all getting ready for war. So Cap has got his shield and Hawkeye has got his explosive arrows and everything. And she's got this like real little gun.
She's got the two pistols, and it's like,
no, she's only got one.
Oh, okay. I thought she had the two.
No, she's got like one pistol. And you think, couldn't we have given her like, I don't know, like a, you know, M15 or a couple of Uzis or something to give her a little bit like firepower. But no, she's got this like really tiny little gun, which
a bazooka.
Yeah, a rocket launch. So, or even those like laser things that she's got on her bracelets, just sort of like, you know, have them sort of fired up or something. But, you know, that just kind of always looked a little bit weird to me. But then again, Hawkeye is bow and arrow, so, you know, that probably looks
It is what it is. And from there, we wouldn't get another film until the very next year. We'd have May 3rd, 2013. We'd have the next edition, the Iron Man franchise, Iron Man 3.
Got a lot of apologies to make. Nothing's been the same since New York. You experience things, and then they're over. I can't sleep. And when I do, I have nightmares. Honestly, there's 100 people who want to kill me. I hope I can protect the one thing I can't live without.
Yes. Iron Man 3. Now, Desa, what did you think of this movie? I thought it was kind of following, you know, that act of Avengers, which, to be fair, no one can really do. That's like, it's not really fair for this film to have to be burned with. But with that said, I really thought it dropped the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I liked it more the second time that I saw it, because it's one of my least favorite ones. I think for a start, there's lots of. Well, one of the things that really, let's cut to the chase. One of the things that really, really took me out of this film was that you had this absolutely awesome, terrifying character, the Mandarin, the Ben Kingsley.
Mm-hmm.
And then it basically sort of pulled a swerve on you. It turned out that it was just basically a front. But the thing is, it'd been so good up to that point as a villain. With his sort of little video piece and everything, but you really wanted like the big showdown with him and Iron Man. And then they took the character away from you.
Yeah, they essentially turned him into a joke.
Yeah, it basically became like just sort of like, you know, a joke villain. And when you're actually watching it the second time, that's kind of, and you know that's coming, it kind of works as a plot device. But I think he was so good, you know, in that role as the Mandarin. And one of the things about the Marvel, you know, is that we, you know, with the exception of Loki, not many of them sort of have like, you know, the good villains. The good villains isn't something that they're that interested in doing. They sort of, you know, they pretty much just want to make them for, you know, that film and done. And this was one that was sort of like, you know, really, really good. And when he was sort of out of the way, it was like, oh, well, these are the villains that we've got left. And, but yeah, and also I didn't like the whole, I kind of like the fact that Tony was basically sent down to rock bottom, that he didn't have all the Iron Man equipment that he had wasn't, you know, working. It basically reminded me of the first film where he was having to basically build the Iron Man outfit from scratch. And I thought that this was kind of what we were going to get with this. He was going to basically sort of like have to basically go up against the bad guys in just the basics, like a really basic Iron Man outfit. But then he sort of got the whole thing back, and it became a thing where he didn't actually have to be in the suit, and then he could control the entire Iron Man army and everything. And I just kind of thought it was just kind of, yeah, I just you know, wasn't really get that into it. And again, there's like certain, there's quite a lot of scenes which just really, really drag. Yeah, and then the villains, you know, I mean, it seemed to be a thing that basically if you become a paraplegic, you become a villain. You become evil. It just didn't, yeah, I just wasn't that thrilled with this. And the whole Pepper Potts becoming like super powered at the end as well, I just thought it was stupid. This one, after Avengers, this was basically a massive step down for me.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you. I mean, I kind of understand where they were going for with the Mandarin character, and you sort of parrot what most people say about the big letdown of the film. They felt like they were building up this great character, and you're going to make this big showdown. But I kind of saw where they were coming from. Like we had seen so much of that, you know. And I got, the only thing I can compare it to is maybe the Batman films, where you had this, you know, dark, gritty, realistic version of the character. And it's just, at that point, I'm not saying the director was justified, but I think that was his mentality going in. It's like, well, we've had the dark, gritty, realistic version of these comic book characters on the big screen. Let's try to do something different. Mm. And like I said, it failed, but I sort of saw the mentality going into that. But yeah, this film felt like, you know, they were trying to retell a certain story, the extremist storyline, and obviously, this is a big franchise film with a lot of investors' money, and a lot of people wanted to weigh in and get their 2 cents in. And you had a bunch of things that, you know, you were trying to fit in without, you know, compromising the story. But this is clearly, above all else, more than any other films, too many chefs in the kitchen. Like, this film tried to be too many things to too many people, and I think it satisfied nobody. So it's of all the films, I think this is maybe not the worst, but the biggest disappointment.
Definitely. I mean, it did, you know, the box office was, you know, was this for massive, you know, because the only films, this is the only one, the exception of the two Avengers films, to actually make the 1 billion worldwide. You know, it's a massive thing. I guess that shows as well. Because if you look at these figures, that, you know, the strongest films were tended to be like the Iron Man movies, is basically how important Robbie Downey Jr., you know, was to these films.
And to his credit, he's since then negotiated, trying to get more money. And I believe, I don't know if it's a fact just yet, but he's one of the top grossing actors in Hollywood nowadays. So good for him.
Yeah, and it should be interesting to see actually what Civil War does.
I have to imagine. Yeah. I don't think it's going to do these kind of numbers, but I still think it's going to be a gigantic success.
I think it's going to be the highest, possibly with the exception of Iron Man 3, I think it's going to be the highest of all the other non-Avenger movies.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, let's not get carried away and say things we can't take back. I'm like, I don't think this is going to beat Avengers. In fact, I don't foresee anything beating Avengers in the near future. So
No. I think because Iron Man's in it and Robert Downey Jr. is it, I think it'll, I'm not saying it will bait it, but I could see it doing towards the billion mark. Possibly.
Yeah, that's not too far-fetched. I'll give you that.
Okay.
Okay, speaking of disappointment, let's move on to our next film, Thor the Dark World, which came out in November 8th, 2013. And let's get a little bit of that trailer right now.
After all this time, now you come to visit me, brother. Why? To mock.
I need your help. But I wish I could trust you.
If you did, you'd be the fool I always took you for.
Yes, and that's the next franchise, like, as I said before, Thor the Dark World. Dazza, what'd you think?
In my mind, it's probably the best of all the Marvel movies. I'm joking, of course.
Oh, I see what you did there.
This is the worst of the bunch. This really, you know, I was massively disappointed by this. It was horrible. It was a weird one, because when I went to see it, I felt like I'd missed about like half an hour of the movie. It just seemed to throw you in there. You couldn't really, it was hard to basically grasp what was actually going on. And then you have basically the villains who were just like, just really, really dull. And you feel like you felt like you'd missed some sort of like film in between that explained who we are and what we're trying to do. And to be honest, even now, when I've sort of, you know, seen it again, so I still have no real clue of what we're sort of, you know, attempting to accomplish. It just went on and on and on. And I think they tried to recreate like the big sort of battle thing from Avengers at the end, because there'd be this like big battle that was taking place in all these different places. And it was just awful. The comedy was bad. You know, it was just, you know, really, really cheesy. On most films, I can basically find something that I think is good about them, you know, and entertain. But, I mean, there is one good thing about them, and that's Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Mm-hmm. I thought the scenes that he was in basically, you know, made the film worth watching, but just because of him, and that was it. You know, everything else apart from that was just like total garbage.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This was really a lackluster film. Something that, you know, people were kind of had their expectations a little bit lower after Iron Man 3. Maybe they were unrealistically high after following Avengers. But to follow that with this was, I'll say it was a big letdown.
Yeah.
They were trying to tell certain stories, but I think just like everything fell flat. Nothing really, you know, resonated with the audience. And I'm just like, what are you doing here? It's like I don't even think they knew what the story they were trying to tell. So it's one of those things to where it's just like a failure in all aspects of the film. It's like they couldn't tell a decent romantic story. They couldn't tell the story of this new villain that was so terrible. It brought Thor and Loki together. And, you know, it was one of those things to where I'm just like, I understand what they're maybe trying to get at, but considering you've had so many great Thor stories over the years, it's like, this is the direction you decided to go.
Yeah. And I think as well, I said before that I liked how what they'd done with Asgard, sort of like, you know, with sort of like this fantasy type realm. And even that they seemed to be confused with, because they made it more into like a cross between that and like a Star Wars thing.
That's my big criticism of this film. It's like they seem to dial back all the fantasy elements. It's like, well, you know, Asgard magic isn't really magic. It's just technology that humanity doesn't quite understand. I'm like, really? And you're going to try to brush that off, just, you know, kind of explain that away. And not to mention, you know, a couple of films down the line, they're in fact are going to do a character whose, you know, whole shtick is magic. So are you going to try to say that's advanced technology too? Or what are you going to try to do here exactly?
Yeah, I don't think they basically had a grasp on what Asgard should have been. I mean, they're flying around these spaceships and stuff like that, firing lasers and stuff. It was just, this film was like, you know, really, really, really bad. This is what most of these films, if they sort of like come on TV and I sort of see them, I'll like watch them for a bit, you know, because I know there'll be bit, you know, scenes in there that I want to see. And this is one that I basically just sort of, you know, just won't entertain. And I don't think I've watched it the whole way through. Since I saw it in the cinema, I think, you know, so yeah, and that's saying something, because all of the others I'll watch, but this one, yeah, this one's just awful.
Yeah, good for you not doing it. Just the one scene that sticks out of my mind is when they show Malekith Chauvin in his spaceship to Asgard, and like a couple of the tower peaks turn into cannons. I'm like, oh no. So, because you're in your mind, you know, with so much. I mean, I'm not saying they have to keep things religious to the comic books when they do whatever movie and tell whatever stories they're making. But when you're thinking of Asgard and you're thinking of this magical kingdom, you don't automatically think, oh, this technology with these automated machine guns, and especially the part where they were treating Jan Foster, it was sort of like this, you know, this hologram hub where they were trying to heal her, and I'm just like, oh god. You really kind of, you don't know what you're doing. You're really setting things up going forward. You kind of, you poison the well.
Yeah.
Like you can't go back and be like, oh, just kidding. None of that stuff we established earlier really counts. It's like, no, you're sort of saddled with this going forward. And it's just like, it kind of takes away from Thor, if anything, in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Because one of the things about all the other Marvel movies, they have sort of like, they're quite comfortable to do different things with them. You know, now for sort of like, you know, like, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy world, Earth, stuff like that. And, you know, Doctor Strange probably going to have a different realms to it and stuff like that. But with Thor now, you've kind of lost that sort of, that chance to do like, you know, a fantasy sword and sorcery type world.
And it's funny that they did all that stuff to sort of explain away all the stuff in Asgard, but it still doesn't really explain the stuff with Thor's hammer. And more importantly, it doesn't explain Loki. Like all the things he does with his, you know, magical trickery. It's like, well, then is that technology then? Are we supposed to pretend like none of this is on the level?
Is he a mutant?
Well, they can't use that term, Dad.
Well, no, but is he any human? I don't know. And that's one of the things that actually that whole Asgard thing. There is, I'm not saying they've got to stick to the whole like Norse mythology thing religiously, but there is so many great stories and elements in all of that that they, you know, because when I was a kid, I used to read that, and it was like basically reading a superhero type saga, you know, with the ice giants and everything, you know, and the realm of hell and all stuff like that. And that's going to be really difficult to actually sort of, you know, get any of that, you know, back into that when we do Ragnarok, if we're actually even going to go that way.
Yeah, well, they certainly have their work cut out for them for the next film, and I don't envy them, but, you know, they've righted a lot of ships before in the past that didn't seem like they were going in a particularly great direction, so hopefully, in fact, that actually plays perfect into our next film, something that, you know, prior to this was kind of lackluster, but then going forward, they completely did a 180. And we're, of course, referring to Captain America, the First Avenger. Or not Captain America, First Avenger. I'm sorry, I don't know how myself the way I read this. Captain America, the Winter Soldier, April 4th, 2014. And here's a little bit of that trailer for you.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier. He's a ghost. You'll never find him.
I joined SHIELD to protect people.
Captain, to build a better world, sometimes means tearing the old one down.
Yes, and that's the film. Dazza, what was your impressions of this film?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. This was basically my, still probably my favorite of all the Marvel movies.
That's my opinion, and that's most people's opinion.
Yeah, I just think they just did such a, you know, a great job. Not just with the actual story, but with the whole tone of it and everything. I mean, like the action films, the action scenes, you know, when with the sort of the music they've got and, you know, creating the tone and everything. And it's just, you know, an amazing film. I mean, I will go so far, it's not just like a good Marvel movie. I think it's a really great action movie.
It's a really great film, period.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it never once gets boring. At all, you know, he never goes off on tangents, you know, the whole thing, as opposed to the earlier films where you'd have several stories that was going on, but never really interlocked. This one just has, you know, a really good story that they stick to. You know, I absolutely love the double team of Black Widow and Captain America. I think they had just so much chemistry between them both. You know, it just worked really well. And I absolutely loved it. I thought the Winter Soldier, they got him perfect.
Yeah. And here's the thing, dude. Not only did they get the character well, now with a couple of exceptions, obviously, because it's the film franchise and they have certain things already set up and they can't really do a verbatim story. But of all the films that they've done prior to this, this is the one that was most religious to the original story by Ed Brubaker.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And it sort of, it just the whole thing, you know, just worked, you know, really well. There's not that much I can sort of like, you know, say about it.
It's funny, you know, now that we've talked all the films so far, and the one that we spent the most time was the one that we hated the most. And now that we're getting up to the one that we like the absolute most, the one that, you know, that really is sort of the peak of the franchise, it's like, well, yeah, it's a good film, I guess, let's move on to the next. It's like there's nothing really to complain about, and it seems like it's easier to talk about bad stuff than it is about putting stuff over. And it's just like, okay, man, this is a great film. It's really good. It's one of my favorites. Let's move on to the next film. No, I'm kidding.
it does feel like that at times. But yeah, it just sort of, you know, it did everything that was, you know, that they needed to do. You know, and I watched that film, and there's just so many sort of, you know, just great spectacular scenes. It, like, for example, the, you know, the car chase scene with Nick Fury, where he's, you know, going through, you know, and, you know, the battle on the bridge, and just, you know, just so many, you know, and there's like a real, one of the things that I never feel works in a lot of modern movies is when we do the conspiracy bit, where it turns out like, oh, it's been, you know, one guy behind everything the whole time, you know, when we do it in James Bond films and stuff like that. But this one really worked. You know, it's sort of, you know, it was like a real, you know, a lot of these films are sort of based on, you know, what, on how well they are in how well does the actual, the bad guy scheme come across. And a lot of the time when it's sort of just wanting sort of like, you know, cause havoc just for havoc's sake, it's really, really boring. But this one had something in the fact that the people, you know, the people in Hydra, they thought that they're actually, you know, had a purpose to what they were doing. They weren't just sort of like, you know, destroying the world just because they wanted to destroy the world. They actually had a thing that they were creating order and everything. And, you know, and that makes them more interesting as villains. And the whole sort of, you know, what we were fighting for at the end when we were trying to get control of the helicarriers and stuff like that. You know, you knew, you know, there was something tangible about what it was we were, you know, trying to do. So, you know, I actually loved all that. And yeah, I just thought it was a great movie.
Yeah. So from the, like I said, I think the real problem with we're talking about this is that there's nothing really to complain about, and with that, there's not a whole lot to talk about.
No.
Are you ready to talk about the next film, Dazza?
Yep.
Okay. From there, we would get August 1st, 2014. We'd have a new entry in this comic book franchise. We'd have, so up until this point, you know, we had just entries based on these four, you know, characters, but up until then, we had this is the first new franchise that we had from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's as follows.
Bye. Now!
Yeah, hey, cool, man. No problem. No problem at all.
Who are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
Forget it.
That is, of course, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
I mean, while Captain America and Soldier is the best of the Marvel movies, in my opinion, I think Guardians of the Galaxy was the one that was the most fun.
It may not be everyone's... Everybody may not think it's the best, but it's everybody's favorite. It's the one that's the most fun.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, there's just so many sort of like, you know, really good moments. I mean, for a start, the, you know, the soundtrack, you know, I absolutely loved. And yeah, I did get the,
I was about to say that's something they went as far as to make an original soundtrack, release it and actually sell really well.
Yeah. I mean, this is just on the other side as well. This is I kind of hope that Suicide Squad goes down in this direction a bit by having sort of like a really good soundtrack that makes you want to sort of, that you basically, you know, gets you into the mood of the film. I mean, there's so many, and as well, the soundtrack wasn't just there to be there. It played into what was going on the screen so much. So at the start, where it's basically got the scene where he's, you know, strutting through the, you know, the temple that is Robin and that. And then there's the David Bowie, bit where he's sort of flying into the head of the celestial light, the sort of type, you know, the space oddity type, you know, it just sort of really works on all those levels. But yeah, it's just sort of, just such a fun film, really, really funny. You know, and it's quite refreshing for a sci-fi film, because I find that a lot of sci-fi films nowadays tend to be like really, really serious. Or, you know, there's sort of, you know, none of them have got that sort of like, that's, you know, that's like Star Wars, you know, fun, fancy element to it. And this one did, and I just thought, you know, his characters, I just sort of, you know, I came away from this, you know, when they go off on the, you know, in the spaceship, you know, as a team, I felt that I really liked them as a unit, you know what I mean? I just had this like feel good feeling about them all being together, and it just like, you know, I absolutely, you know, loved it. And you know, Rocket Raccoon was one of those things where I thought, you know, could be, you know, it could be really, really bad if they didn't get it right. And to me, they just managed to pull it off. You know, they had him as sort of like a, you know, I could see Rocket, I saw Rocket Raccoon as a natural character as opposed to just sort of like, you know, a CGI one, which, you know, something that I'll come to in a bit later with a later film, you know, doesn't always sort of, you know, work that well. But for him, I thought it worked really great. But yeah, as a film, I absolutely sort of loved it. And even like, you know, minor characters, like the, the guy who, I forgot the guy's character, but the guy who sort of brought him up as sort of everything, you know, that character to me was great. You know, it just sort of, you know, there's just so many, you know, like really, really good elements. And a lot of people sort of cite the villain of the piece as not being, you know, particularly great, but I thought it was like, you know, fine.
It was one of those things to where it didn't really matter. Like, yeah, I think what that criticism actually holds some value. But really, I mean, the film is about them coming together and them being together as a team, more so about, oh, this is who we're fighting. It's like, just like, that was sort of secondary.
Yeah.
And that's sort of something that you could kind of get away with the first film, because it's sort of the assembling of the team, but and establishing each of the individual characters. But that's something going forward that they may have to work on. Because you can get away with that in the first film, but when we're talking about a sequel down the road, it's like, I don't know if you can get away with that.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. Well, one thing as well, a guy who was revelation in this was Batista. I thought he was awesome. But basically, he had sort of like, you know, the perfect lines, you know, in the film. And a lot of reviews I've read, you know, sort of said like, you know, how great it was. You know, some of the lines that he delivered, like the one where he sort of says, you know, nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it. Just stuff like that. Just like, you know, a really, really fun, you know, character to be in there. And they just all played like, you know, a really, really good role, a lot of them. And yeah, as a film, you know, I actually, you know, I actually went, found an excuse to go see this twice. I absolutely loved it. It just sort of, you know, just a really enjoyable film.
And that's good, because up until this point, like I said, they had not established a new character in this franchise of films. And there were a lot of people wondering, was like, well, how well is this going to do? Because it's a bunch of characters no one's ever heard of. And aside maybe from a couple, it's like, I don't really know how this is going to do, how it's going to be well received. If people are going to, people kind of know it's a Marvel film, but you kind of question, especially from the general public, how many of those people knew. So that was the big question mark going forward. It's like, they had a lot of things planned going forward for all these new characters, but Guardians of the Galaxy was really the first attempt at that. And they absolutely knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, and it was a big risk because, you know, where you've got a character where one's a raccoon, one's a tree, and like you said, the character that people don't know, you know, this one was a risk, but they showed that they basically, they don't need to have characters that everyone will know to get to the thing. If it's sort of like, do it in such a way that people know beforehand, you know, look, this is going to be a fun film, this is going to be funny, have a good time, you know, watching this film, you know, all the elements, you know, were there, and I thought it was a cracking film.
Yes, so good on Marvel for that film. Let's move on to the next we had in May 1st, 2015, which of course I'm referring to Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. Let's play a little bit of that trailer right now.
For mercy. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. Your own puppets. Tangled in strings.
Yes, that's of course the second entry to the Avengers film Age of Ultron. Dazzle, what'd you think?
This was another one that I enjoyed a lot more the second time that I saw it. the first time I went to see it, I liked it, but I was kind of disappointed. I think this was another one where you were thrown right into the action. I think I was expecting that you would get at least about like 15 minutes of them sort of like coming together and sort of like, you know, we've got a threat that we need to deal with, this is it sort of thing. And you were basically just sort of into it as if they've all basically been back together for months and everything and missed all that massive segment out. And I thought the first half hour was like really, really rushed. You know, I think the, you know, you had that sort of scene and we get the scepter and then the whole Ultron, I thought, was like really rushed on that initial scene as a character and stuff. And, you know, those things that kind of took me out of the film somewhat. One of the things that I have to say I really, and even now I'm not 100% is Ultron as a character, mm-hmm. not so much the character or the voice, because I think that is absolutely great. But the CGI of him took me out. I think the CGI seemed to take a backward step from Avengers, because I think Hulk and Ultron, they weren't as seamlessly in the film as what Hulk was in Avengers.
No.
There was just something like when he's sort of like, at the start when he's interacting with Black Widow and stuff, it just looked to me like they weren't in the same room. I was like really conscious of the fact that he was CGI, which in Avengers I wasn't. And Ultron, like I said, when he's sort of in the scene and when he's talking and stuff, I couldn't sort of treat it as this is the character talking. I felt like there was somebody to the left of the screen basically giving his lines. It just sort of, sometimes with CGI, it's great when it works, but sometimes I think there's something to be said for basically just having a guy in a suit. you know what I mean? It just sort of, Ultron just, and like I say, I love the actual, the character, the voice and everything. It just sort of, you know, the CGI of it just didn't, it just looked like it wasn't in the film. I was just aware that I was watching, like, you know, something which had been added later. You know, but generally speaking, I think, you know, on previous viewings, I've watched it quite a few times since I first saw it. You know, I do, you know, enjoy it as a film. I think there's lots of action in it, you know, and lots of, you know, different, you know, action scenes and stuff. So personally, I do like it as a film. It's not in my top three or anything like that. But generally speaking, I think it is a good sequel. There are certain scenes that quite fit quite awkwardly. I mean, the whole thing where Thor goes off, and does like the dream sequence bit. It just seems like, you know, really odd. I couldn't really sort of, you know, get my head around why that was there and stuff. And the whole thing with the, when they initially find the artificial intelligence that they make into Ultron, all that seemed, you know, quite bizarre. It seemed to be like a clear origin where that came from, or where all the robot, but we see at the end where they all came from and everything. It just, it seemed to me that if Hydra actually had all these robots, you know, that they built, that was the implication. Why they didn't actually use those when they were actually defending the base from the Avengers in the first place? You know, it just seemed like really odd. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, but I think the good things about it, you know, far outweighed, you know, the bad. I mean, the stuff I love the twins. I thought they were like real good against you, Scarlet Witch especially, and also the Vision.
That was a character that you thought maybe going forward, like how that would translate to film. It's like, especially to a mass market audience. And it's like, it works fine in the comic books. People accept it for what it is at its face value. But really, when you look at the character, you kind of wonder going forward, it's like, are people going to buy this? Are people going to laugh at it? And for the most part, nobody really had a problem with it.
Yeah, because I mean, I personally love the look of the Vision, you know, in the comic, but because I love the fact that it's kind of quite retro, you know, it's got a very 70s look to it. It's a bit like the Falcon's outfit. Again, that's got that sort of, you know, I love those two outfits, you know, for that. But to translate onto film, like you, I was kind of thinking, you know, how is this gonna look? And it's funny as well, because you didn't see him in any of the trailers or anything. You can see him quite in the distance in the poster, and when he basically came out, I thought, wow, that looks, you know, awesome. And also the character as well, you know, I think they sort of, you know, they did a real good job of it, establishing like this new character, you know. So I think for me the pluses, you know, far outweighed the actual, you know, any sort of gripes that I would have with the film.
Yeah, it was one of those things to where, and, you know, there was no way following that first Avengers film, like we were talking about Iron Man 3, there was no way to follow that, so to try to sit there and pretend, well, you know, it's the sequel, it's supposed to be everything that the first one was, bigger, badder, better, and this film was never going to be that, even on its best day, even if it had been everything that we wanted, it was never going to follow up to that great film that they did, you know, a couple years back in 2012. So for people to expect sort of, more of that, it just, well, there's no way you could to get that. It's not really sustainable. But for what it was, all things considered, like I said, I have my criticisms of the film too. Like, I kind of agree with what you were saying earlier, the fact that Ultron kind of just you know, that I expected a certain thing from the character, but then when I actually saw it on screen, it was like, there's a couple things I didn't much particularly care for. I understood their mentality behind it, and on paper it may have seemed like a great idea, but a lot of things that just in execution didn't really come off all that well. So all things considered, it's a film that has its problems, but its benefits outweigh the badness of the film. So it's one of those things to where it was impossible to live up to the Avenger, you know, the last Avengers film. So this was just another entry in the film franchise. I have to imagine the third Avengers film and the fourth Avengers film down the road, they'll be good, but to expect something, you know, from that first Avengers film, I don't think we're going to get.
No.
Okay. And like I said, that's not a bad thing. That's just, you know, maybe you should lower your expectations. But with that said, maybe, you know, maybe they'll show us all wrong, and maybe this third Avengers film and then maybe even the fourth Avengers film will be fantastic, maybe on par with the first one.
Yeah.
Okay. And then from there, we're going to go into our final entry in this Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going to go to July 17th, 2015, with the final entry that we have here, Ant-Man.
The size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
If you give godlike powers to everyone, it's going to be chaos.
So how do we stop him?
By knowing I.
So, Dazzle, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, of all the Marvel films I've gone to see, this is probably the one that I had the least expectations for. And I thought it was fine as a movie. I think they did a lot of good comedy stuff by taking a concept that in itself was quite sort of ridiculous, but sort of like giving a nod and a wink to say, yeah, we know this is, you know, a bit stupid. But they had sort of like, you know, actual reasons, you know, for the sort of, you know, why they were basically, you know, making people so small and everything. And they also sort of also made it into a power that could be used, you know, in a fight, plausible with the fact that we actually had him sort of going small but having superhuman strength, well, you know, increasing his strength. You know, I thought it was you know,
I don't think he increased his strength, but he retained his strength as a full. He retained his full human strength, right, whilst being shrunken down.
Yeah. I always thought they actually said that they actually increased his strength as doing it. But anyway, I thought it was, you know, fine as a movie. You know, the the story it was fine. They made it into like, you know, a fun element. I mean, the fact that they sort of have that, you know, the battle with the shrinking. The two shrinking on the sort of on the kids' railway track and everything, and the Thomas the Tank Engine bumping into him, and that being sort of like made really big, you know. But they did a lot of fun, you know, stuff with it. And there was also the, you know, the surprise Avengers appearance with you know, Falcon and everything. You know, I personally, like, you know, liked it as a film. You know, it wasn't sort of like, you know, blew me away or anything, but it was one that I sort of, you know did enjoy at the time. And it's, I think the one thing that also was, and this isn't so much on the film itself, but sort of like, you know, that it obviously did a lot better than they were actually expecting at the box office. So now they're actually doing, you know, another one. And to me, this isn't something, a trend that I particularly, you know, want them to go with, that every time that one goes well, that they automatically sort of like, you know, throw it into a sequel and put other films back. What I prefer them to do is basically do like sort of, you know, one film establishing the character and then having that character appear in other films down the road. So having it appear in Avengers and stuff like that. You know, I don't necessarily want to see, I'm not thrilled to see another Ant-Man movie. I think they've done really well with the one that they did. I don't necessarily sort of, you know, want to see another Ant-Man movie.
No, I sort of agree with you there, because there's so many characters that we want to see down the road. The fact that we're going to be bogged down with, you know, another film, another sequel, it's like, that's great. No, I mean, you clearly have a track record of that. You can introduce these characters and have them be well received by the public. That's great and all, but let's continue this train going, and not just because, well, this one film does particularly well. Well, then that should encourage you to, you know, be more forthgoing with okay, we can introduce these new characters and people more accepting to the public, then let's keep the gravy train rolling, as opposed to, well, people like these, we don't know if people are going to like these other characters down the road, so let's maybe make a sequel to the new characters we've introduced. And to me, that sort of comes off as an apologist. It's like, well, we didn't think it'd do well, and the fact that it did well, as opposed to maybe doing something a little risky, we're just going to continue making sequels.
Yeah, and they've put one of the films back as well. I think it's Captain Marvel. They've put back to actually, you know, accommodate, you know, this film, which is, it's fine. We're still going to get a Captain Marvel movie, but, you know, by doing this, it is going to sort of basically down the road take away sort of, you know, more characters that we could actually see, you know, being made into films. But yeah, but as a film, I sort of, you know, I did really, you know, enjoy it and everything. You know, there's some good special effects with the ants and stuff like that. So, and they took basically a concept of power and that was quite sort of limited, not having much to do with, and they managed to make an entire film out of it and make it, you know, something sort of compelling. So, you know, for that, you know, I think this, you know, this was a good one.
Yeah. And I think that's going to do it for the time being. We've had shows before where we've previewed all the movies, and I'll be sure to link that in the description. Check that show out if you want to know what our opinions are of the films going forward. But with that out of the way, that's going to do it for the films that we've had the privilege of seeing so far. And I guess eventually down the road, we're going to, you know, let these films pile up and eventually do another one of these shows.
Yeah. So 2019.
I don't know if we're going to wait that long. I think what we're going to probably do is whenever these films come out, we'll probably do a show.
Yeah. So yeah. So we won't have long to wait for the next one.
Okay.
Got to America coming up soon.
Yes. And if you haven't already, check out the show that Dazza and I did, The Full Britannia. I don't know exactly the release schedule that Coughlin's going to do, but I have to imagine he's going to do that one first, and then he's going to do this show. So, if you haven't already, check that show out. It's a great show where me and Dazza talk all things concerning his articles about all these things about wacky English culture. So, if you haven't already, check that show out. It's amazing. the dart section was my favorite, if you haven't already figured it out from you've seen from other shows that we've done. So, if you haven't already, check that out. You know, we'd be remiss if we end the show without doing our usual shtick. Dazza, what do you have coming up down the road?
Well, I've got an article coming out this week, which is basically going to be previewing this week's Invicta show.
Ooh, so nice.
I always do like a hype piece for Invicta. I'm a massive MMA fan, but I'm not necessarily massively knowledgeable about the actual art of MMA, but I am a fan that's really passionate. So for Invicta, I'll basically do these like pretty much just sort of hype pieces, but we also sort of talk about basically, you know, why the fights are important and stuff, and try to preview some of the more eccentric of the fighters on the roster, shall we say. So I've got that piece coming out this week. My next comic piece that I'm going to be writing, I've basically been very mutant heavy in the past few months or so. So I thought I'd give that a rest. I'm basically going to do a piece on the Avengers.
Ooh, nice.
But what I'm going, rather than it be a sort of entire like history of the Avengers, which would basically be really long and complicated, I'm going to basically take the reader to the first Avengers comics that I ever bought when I first started getting into Marvel. So I'm going to start with what the Avengers, what the lineup were, what the team was there, and then just sort of go on. Because from that point when I started reading, there was like a large number of storylines which were like, you know, really, really,
okay,
really
do,
good.
Do you feel like sharing us what year this was and what team this was?
I can't remember. I think it would be about 86 roughly, and basically the lineup it was at a time when basically the lineup wasn't the typical Avengers lineup that you would get today. The only sort of like, you know, regulars in there were Captain America and Wasp. The rest of the lineup was when I first started reading was Black Knight, Hercules, Captain Marvel, as in the Captain Marvel who was the lady who could turn into light. Star Fox. So it was a very, you know, but this was a great thing about the Avengers back then. It wasn't just sort of like for Iron Man, Captain America type, you know, like, it, you know, you had sort of like, you'd have a few key members, but generally speaking, you would have sort of like, you know, quite an evolving membership as it was.
Yeah, very, very similar. You know, you're talking about your other articles, very similar to the X-Men.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have your core characters sort of still there, but the roster would change up. So it'd be refreshing, you know, whenever you have somebody else come on the to write it, or maybe they would just feel flexible and feel free to rotate cast members in and out. So that was fun.
Yeah. So I'm basically going to be doing a piece on that, because with some, in the period I'm going to be talking about, some really good storylines. We had the Under Siege storyline, which, you know, which was, you know, one of my favorite storylines of all time. You have the sort of like the war with Olympus, and then you had sort of like this, the first time we did kind of like a dissembling of the team itself, you know, which was, you know, for it's something that we repeated quite a lot afterwards, but for the time it was quite good. So it's basically going to be sort of like it's going to be the history of when I really got into Avengers, up to the time when I basically, when the comic went in a direction that I didn't like and I came out of it. So it's kind of like a personal thing for me, but I'll also be going back to a few little hints of what, so, you know, when I used to buy back issues, you know, what the actual tone of the Avengers, you know, in those days was.
Yeah, okay. And what have you been reading as of late?
Well, in the last show I mentioned that I've basically been into the bargain bucket of my local comic shop and got a few really cheap comic back issues. And some basically DC ones. So the ones that I've not really read generally before, but the two that I sort of got, Power Girl and Harley Quinn.
Oh, okay, cool.
I got a few issues of that, which, you know, I actually really did enjoy, and it was sort of, the two I read was Power Girl and Harley Quinn. I got a few issues of that, and also a few issues of Black Canary.
Ooh, how's that?
Yeah, actually really enjoyed it. What I liked about them is that even though I'd not read them before, they were quite easy comics to get into, you know, just like a few pages. Even though I didn't know the whole backstory and everything, I sort of had a sense of who the character was and what the concept was. So the Black Canary one actually reminded me a little in the artwork and how the story went, a bit like the Hawkeye. You know, Hawkeye in Marvel, the actual Hawkeye comic, it's got that sort of like, how to describe that sort of, basically, like a really down to earth feel.
Oh,
to me.
Okay, I get what you're getting at now.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of that sort of concept, but it was, you know, because she's kind of like undercover as like a pop star in this one. but I sort of, you know, I got into it and really enjoyed it, and really liked the artwork and everything. And then same with Power Girl and Harley Quinn. I did find it quite amusing because Harley Quinn seems to have become this like Deadpool character.
Yeah,
she's like breaking the fourth wall and stuff like that. And
just sort of, you know, how's that come across?
Which kind of does work because she's basically insane as a character. Mm-hmm. So it kind of does work. But I was reading it, I'm thinking, yeah, they're trying to do like a Deadpool with this. But I thought it was like a really, you know, because again, I don't really know much about Power Girl, but I got really quickly into the thing that she's obviously, this is like a double act. She's obviously like the straight-laced, you know, serious superhero. And she's kind of like the insane villain and stuff. So, you know, I got the comedy elements of it all and that, you know. So, you know, and like I said, I got the comics like really, really cheap. You know, I got them for like 50 pence, which is kind of like less than you can buy a chocolate bar these days. So, you know, for the comics that I've ever mentioned, so like, you know, did enjoy it. In fact, I think it's something I'm going to be doing, trying a lot more regularly, is basically sort of like, you know, going to, you know, because places where you can, like market stores and stuff, where you can get comics, you know, quite cheap. I'll probably do a bit more experimenting and just try and pick, you know, comics up from time to time, and not necessarily to sort of find ones which are just fun to sort of pick up and just sort of like, you know, read on their own, as opposed to having to, you know, follow an entire series to get any sort of like, you know.
Yeah, you're just doing it for fun or to sort of broaden your horizons. There's no big, you know, oh, I'm going to do an article about this down the road, or I'm going to do a show about this down the road. It's just, you know, you're just reading for fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I used to, I think some of the comic lines have forgotten how to do, which is to actually just buy a comic, and even if it is part of a series, have something in there that basically makes it that when you've read it, you felt like you've actually read a story, even if it's, and it can be like a continuing saga, but just within that, you know, one comic that you're reading, have sort of like a just something happening there, just so you feel like you've actually got your money's worth from a comic. I hate these comics where they're basically like completely filler, you know, and stuff.
Yeah, you'll get that a lot in comic books nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, there's one I actually remember buying a just bought a comic during the Avengers versus X-Men. And it was right at the end where they were basically doing like the final issue of that series, and they had all the spin-offs. And it was one of the spin-offs where it was an X-Men one. And it was such a rip-off because basically the concept of the comic was that Cyclops and White Queen were fighting basically as the Phoenix were fighting all the heroes. And this was happening in the comics. Obviously, to tie in with that, this particular comic's idea was that while they were fighting all the things, they were actually in their minds having dinner together.
Okay. I've read that issue now. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I absolutely hated that because it added absolutely nothing towards the actual saga as a whole. But it actually was a really dull storyline in its own right. It just basically was like, oh, we've got to tie something in with this month's like big battle issue. We'll do this. It's like a really cool like thing, but they're basically having dinner while all this in their minds while this going on. And it's kind of like a neat gag for maybe a page or so, but to have an entire comic around about that just to me felt just like a ripoff.
It's something they're telling this certain story, but they're actively choosing to no sell what's going on in the event. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it just sort of, you know, it was just obviously that they couldn't think of a comic to a story to actually fit in with the whole thing. So we just came off with like, you know, basically a gag issue. But, you know, it's sort of, when you're actually buying that comic with some, for something to read, it just felt as though to like, you know, felt cheated.
All right, then that's going to do it for this week's show. Unless there's anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up.
No, I'm done.
Okay, so like I said, keep an eye out for all of Daz's articles as well as future shows in the future. And if you haven't already, check out my shows with Alex and Dave where we talk whatever comes out in the given week for comic books, comic conversations. So I think it's going to wrap this up for this week's shows. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys later.